Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, no concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, no concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way.
Music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This is movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussy-footing, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
turn, I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfucker, upmade me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, are you not ready?
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness. Ever since the Declaration of Independence, we've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years they have fed you this foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Welcome to another edition of Your World News. I'm your host, Solomon Kamajan. And again, I'm joined by a beautiful, beautiful array of genius, of college student genius that are helping me co-host this edition of Your World News. I know it's been a little bit of a hiatus since the last time that we were here, but I appreciate, you know, all of you that are listening right now, whether it's live or if you're listening on the archive. And, you know, today I'm joined by Calvin, Olivia, and Aaliyah in studio today. If you're tuning in right now, you already know the theme of this of today's show is the residual impact of colonialism and chattel slavery. And beyond that, we're gonna give a deep critical analysis of colonialism, chattel slavery, in the spirit of the great Walter Rodney, who wrote that seminal, you know, work. Known as How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, the African continent, and and we can we're going to expound upon that, looking at how Euro-America, the United States of America, has contributed mightily to the underdevelopment of the African continent, how the United States of America, as well as other actors throughout the globe, right now are playing a significant role in underdeveloping the African continent, why countries like the Congo have so, like, literally trillions of dollars of mineral resources, but the people continue to subsist on virtually, you know, less than $3, $2 a day. Why is that? And we're going to get into that. And then, you know, being critical thinkers, being activists, being organizers, as we are all are right now in this studio, and those who are listening right now, it's important for us to discuss this, to raise the veil up, because this is a topic that the corporate media will never, ever put into its proper light. They will never even touch this in any shape, form, or fashion. But we're going to take it a step further. And so we're not only covering this issue, we're not only discussing this issue, but we're going to talk about what might be some practical, pragmatic, tangible, if you will, solutions to this, you know, this issue. So just real quickly, I just want to thank you guys for joining us. I don't know if anyone has anything they want to say as we open up. Calvin, anything? Calvin, not to put anyone on the spot. Anybody? Yeah, anything. Like both you brothers are from West Africa. So you definitely know. I mean, we've had conversations off air, and you guys know the issue, you know, very well. But you know, whenever you are ready to chime in, you know, just definitely, you know, let me know. And anyone, and oh, excuse me for being not the greatest host right now, because I should have told everyone listening the call-in number. Anyone that wants to call in live, all right, wants to call in, have a comment, a question, you want to chime into this discussion, the call-in number is 929-477-3696. So again, that's 929-477-3696. And that's if you want to call in and chime in, and we'll bring you right on the show. So give full context. The students that are in this office right now are part of a program where we meet, you know, on a weekly basis, once or twice a week, usually twice a week, and we discuss critical issues that are going on that are impacting people throughout the African diaspora. But we even go even further. I mean, you know, we'll touch upon issues that are impacting indigenous people in the global South, you know, Native Americans and indigenous people throughout the Western Hemisphere, aboriginals, you know, the original people of the country and / continent of Australia. I mean, we get into it. And colonialism and chattel slavery are two of those issues that we've spent at least two sessions, two workshops, deconstructing and deconstructing and from a range of different angles and channels. And so this is kind of like our reading group that we come together, and we have these discussions on a week to week basis, and we discuss what might be some practical solutions. You know, one of the things that pops up oftentimes, and Olivia, you and I were talking about this, I think last week, about the importance of Pan-Africanism, as Kwame Nkrumah discussed. You know, he said Pan-Africanism, you know, should be an objective that all African people move towards, an objective, because imagine if most of the African world was Pan-African. Imagine that. Imagine if that objective came to fruition. Imagine that. So then, therefore, you know, we're seeing each of our own, like in the true essence of Ubuntu, we're seeing each of our issues, whether whether you're in Detroit, Michigan, or you're in Darfur. You know, we're seeing your issue as my issue, and you know, and the connections, and so I you're catching hell because of colonization, if you're catching hell because of police brutality and white supremacy, as you said, Calvin, before we came on, then we're taking up for each other. We're taking up for each other. We're not letting our guard down and saying, oh, you know, yeah, it's kind of bad what's going on, but in one ear, out the other ear, or even worse, seeing what's going on and just not even caring, just being completely apathetic, being completely apathetic to the issue, you know, itself. So with that being said, what are your thoughts on colonialism as we see it, Calvin?
Colonialism is a very complex topic. Even though we come to consensus that it's a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
the real question is, the debate is whether it is the cause of what, assuming we're talking about Africa, right?
Right, yeah.
Whether that's the cause of why Africa is the way it is today, or is it something else? That's the real debate.
And what's the way it is? Like, when you say the way it is, so that we're all on the same page.
You know, how majority of the, me speaking for the West
side West Coast.
Of the continent, our majority, the classes, not really much of a spread in the middle class. It's more so you're either poor or you're rich.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I believe the middle class is what really builds an economy in Africa, mm-hmm. like West Africa lacks that. So, and what's to blame? That colonialism is questionable. It's
questionable.
It's very complex. It's part of the blame, but is that the only blame?
All right,
that's what we're here to
do. I think colonialism is to blame. I think it is, colonialism is to blame, but that's, I wouldn't give it the entire blame because, especially in today's world, where these African countries have, in you know, been separated by their colonial past for almost 50 years now, and yet we're still living, we're still not using our resources to its, you know, its potential. You know, corruptness plagues Africa right now, especially with our leaders, and there are many factors to it, but colonialism definitely is one of those factors, because who knows what Africa would be today. You know, where we would be today if the white man didn't, you know, seek to conquer and steal from our land. But it definitely is a huge, huge, huge factor.
It's something we can't really, I mean, we can ask questions like that, but we can't really get an answer. It's more so about what we can do to assist.
Yeah, I agree, but that's the thing, we don't know what Africa might have been like today. That right was stripped from us. But it is the way that it is today now, based on one route, which was through colonialism. And so I do think it is to blame, but I do think there are other factors too. Especially for today's world.
And you both bring up some interesting points. But when you look, for instance, just to chime in, because you mentioned Calvin, like the resource, you mentioned corruption, you know, outside of the impact of colonialism. So the resources, that's a good point you bring up. The resources, most of these African nations don't even control it. They don't even control. And then so if we say, oh, well, it's corrupt leaders that are putting it. When a lot of these African nations had democratically elected leaders that sought for the best interests of their people. So, for instance, Patrice Lumumba, we started talking about Congo. So people want to say, well, look how, you know, corrupt Mobutu was and this, that, and the other. Well, the United States government, Dwight D. Eisenhower, put in the hit for him, tried to assassinate him by poisoning his toothpaste. That didn't work. And so then the United States government, through this Central Intelligence Agency known as the CIA, consorted with the Belgians to arrange for his kidnap. And so they were able to get the willing, you know, sycophant, you know, Mobutu to do their bidding. They orchestrated it. They were the masterminds behind it. He was then subsequently kidnapped and then, shot
and then cut into pieces and put into sulfuric acid. And then what does the United States government do next? They usher in Mobutu, who then reigns and rules over Congo with a bloody fist for 37, 38 years. And this guy was known. He was known to be corrupt. He was known to be a butcher, was known to be an extortionist, extorted billions and billions of dollars to offshore accounts throughout Europe. And the United States and all these other countries that benefited from the resources of Congo, they turned a blind eye. They knew what was going on, but they turned a blind eye because they said, oh, this is our man. He is going to allow us to continue to go in and extract uranium, you know, platinum, as we know, cobalt, you know, rubber. And so they love these butchers. They love these butchers. If the butchers allow them to do, but Lumumba, they hated Lumumba. I mean, Lumumba didn't even last an entire year before he was marked for death. And all he wanted to do is make sure that all those resources that I just named, and then now, you know, and then all the resources that we now know Congo has underneath its ground, he wanted to make sure that those resources benefited the people. And as we know, the playbook stays the same, whether it's countries in the African continent or other countries throughout the global South. The United States, when they say somebody is, you know, we hate dictators, they're lying. They don't hate dictators. They label most of the time, not all the time, but much of the time when they label dictators, it's usually people that, like they did Hugo Chavez. Hugo Chavez in Venezuela was not a dictator at all. He wasn't a dictator in any shape, form, or fashion. They labeled him a dictator because he refused to allow the U.S. to continue to expropriate, you know, oil, the oil resources from Venezuela. He wanted to use those resources to help the people, social programs, which he did. But, you know, you look at real dictators, you look at people that are real, you know, kind of butchers in different countries. I mean, we look at whether it's Saudi Arabia, we can name a number of countries in the U.S. that has a very cozy relationship to it. So it's much more complex than that. I mean, that, you know, so we see neocolonization going on right now. And so, yes, there is corruption. But a lot of times we have to ask our questions, so why, like you guys know this, you're from the African continent, why does the United States and France and, you know, and the British, why do they have such cozy relationships with people that are actual dictators, that are actually corrupt? And if you really, really want the truth and you want to dig not too far beneath the surface and looking at history, you'll find out that they enable these people to operate in the fashion that they do. They enable them. And that's the story globally, not just in the African continent, but we know this. Augusto Pinochet in Chile. I mean, this guy was killed tens of thousands of people. And who helped put him into power? The United States government. The United States government helped put him to power. Assassinated Salvador Allende. I mean, this is the history. So we can't have a responsible conversation about this unless we are putting a significant amount of blame on these actors, United States, Europe, you know, a significant amount of blame on those who have enabled, you know, this to come about. And I know, Calvin, you had something to say. Aaliyah's taking diligent notes, so she looks like she's pensive. And anytime you want to jump in, Aaliyah, you know, please do.
I have a question.
You have a question?
Yeah. Would, in terms of corruptness, right? Would corruptness, like, I would question, that's why I'm asking, I would question that corruptness is influenced from colonialism, or can you yourself tell me a time, like a historical timeline where corruption existed in Africa, or was it like something that because of colonialism it's something that was birthed in Africa?
No, corruption, it wasn't birthed in Africa. Corruption exists, yeah.
Per se, but like, were Africans corrupted in sense of, if colonialism never happened, would there still be corruption today?
I mean, that's hard to say because you know, with human nature. I mean, human nature, that there are people that are really good people and benevolent people, and you know, when you have you know, so it's hard to say that there wouldn't be any sort of corruption in any shape, form, or fashion, you know, because sometimes people get into power and the power gets to them, and we've seen that in you know, within the African continent. We've seen that we've seen that in the United States time and time again. We've seen that with many different political leaders in the United States and in Europe. And so and just I'm gonna come to a finish on this, but when there like are two when there are true functioning democracies where external elements are not allowed to seep their dirty, nefarious hands on the politics of another country, usually the people's will democratically will, as quickly as people were brought to power, will be taken out of power. And oftentimes the United States does not allow that to happen. So it's just kind of like, for instance, it's laughable that the United States complains about potential meddling by the Russians, right? You know, potentially impacting the 2016 election. But who is the U.S. to even whatever? When the United States, when they haven't liked the outcome of elections, or they were fearful that somebody might win a certain election in a different country, the United States and other European nations have outright assassinated these leaders. So have played a major role in the assassination or these illegal coups that have taken people, ripped them away from the seat of power that they were put in democratically. And the U.S. says, no, we don't like the results. We don't like the result that the fact that Maurice Bishop is the leader of Grenada. We don't like the fact that he's a socialist. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna go in there, this gunboat diplomacy, and we're gonna take him out of power. We're gonna take him out of power. And you know, throughout this show, I will continue to give different examples, like I just did with Grenada. Examples where the United States has done this time and time again, and that's not just corruption, that's evilness. So when you ask the timeline of is there a timeline in terms of corruption, you're talking about like where we see like the first, I mean, you know, quote unquote corrupt.
The reason why I asked is because like I've been aside like, you know, hypothetical, you know, situation like where an African saw a white man came and conquered their land. Mm-hmm. So it made them think, wow, if they can do this, what can I do to my own people to make sure? Because what they probably saw was people have power and they took advantage of it. Because if you don't take, they probably thought, if you don't take advantage of that power, the next man will. So maybe if it led down to Africans, or they were influenced to say, well, when I have power, I'm going to take advantage of that. Because if I don't, and I'm just fantasizing.
Yeah,
not like,
I don't necessarily think that's true. Because, just think, for example, just look at slavery, how, you know, chiefs of some tribe, African tribe, sold other tribe members, you know, to poor people. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, basically, they took advantage of them. I don't think greed and all those things necessarily stem from colonialism. It's just that's just human behavior. But if one thing I can say, like I said earlier, this all, regardless of what we may think, the truth is we're never going to know the answer of what Africa would have been like without colonialism. Because at the end of the day, the white man has stripped all that from us. So have absolutely no clue what might have been.
It's a good point.
So that's how I feel.
It's a good point. It's a very, very good point. Aaliyah, do you want anything to chime in?
Okay, I was just going to say, I feel like we're kind of asking the wrong questions, of like trying to like imagine, you know, think. I think we can just look at like extreme stuff, and like Solomon mentioned, like a lot of examples, we can just look at that and see like, okay, so, and if you don't want to like hypothetically think, like, wouldn't you think it's a little bit odd that each leader after like colonialism is the same, like corrupt? Like, you would imagine it's hard, like, you would think that one person from these countries would think, like, okay, I want to be a leader, I don't want to be like all these corrupt people. But every time and time again, we see like the same like corrupt people. So it is kind of like, I feel like maybe makes you think like this is too convenient for like the West and like the U.S. and the fact that all these leaders agree with like the things that the U.S. agrees with. And
I think it's because
And then also the thing about resources is like Solomon again said, like it's now like colonialism ended, but it never actually ended. Like France still has so much power over the country. The U.S. still has so much, like the military, like the U.S. like what is the U.S. military? There's not a war going on. So it makes you like just stuff like that. Like wait, why is there a military in like why is that even a thing? And it's because like they don't have access to their own resources, so therefore like you can't expect it to prosper within 50 years. Because 50 years isn't a lot.
Yeah.
Like even just like from a policy standpoint, like that's really like.
Man, you brought up something really, really important, Aaliyah, when you said, why is there, like, well, you brought up a couple important things. Where Aaliyah just mentioned about the resources and in an indirect way was kind of pointing out the fact that when you look at, for instance, Europe is many, many European countries are don't have a fraction of the resources that some of these countries in the global south do, not just countries throughout the continent of Africa, but even looking at countries in the Caribbean, countries in Central South America that are replete with tons and tons of resources, different kinds of resources. I mean, for goodness sakes, a lot of European countries, for instance, like Norway, which has actually an abundance of oil. But for instance, Norway has to import most of their vegetables, you know, their edible vegetables, because their climate is incapable of growing, you know, certain amounts of vegetables that maybe we take for granted every day that we can eat every single day. And so, but beyond that, you know, Leah mentioned, like, for instance, France still roughly at the very least about 60%+ of their economy still is linked to their former colonial states in the continent of Africa. So 60%, at the very least, 60% of France's economy is fueled by resources that are emanating from former you know, colonial states in the continent of Africa. You look at Gabon, for instance. Gabon, most of its oil is controlled by who? The French. You know, so you have Elf and Total, these two French, you know, oil companies that are situated in Gabon right now. And you have all these different French nationals that live in these gated communities with big, you know, like they're like these fortress communities where you have these big walls, and these French nationals and their families live, you know, with swimming pools and all these other amenities inside the gates of these gated communities in Gabon. While in the meantime, on the outside, no more than 50 yards away from them, you have indigenous people of Gabon, these black Africans, living, you know, just subsisting in utter hell, devoid of any kind of benefit from the natural resource that these French and the French economy is benefiting from every single freaking day. Every day, and that's just one country that I just picked out that we named. You know, just this one country. You about to say something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. So we, but like Aaliyah said, we have the practical examples right now, of what's going on. The practical examples. And before we take a break, does anyone want to say anything before we go to a break? But Aaliyah, you brought up I mean, that was a loaded, you know, response that's like really making me think about a lot of things. Anybody want to say anything before we take a break?
I was thinking maybe I could just clarify my point about like colonialism ended, but it didn't end. Also, like, you have to like think, I don't know how to say, but like, if you think about like the policies that the U.S. has on like, not policies, but like the way they control their territory, it's like, they may have given them a little bit more freedom than they have when they're, like, actual, like, when they call them actual, like, colonies, but it's still, like, they're not living with complete, like, sovereignty. Like, these, like, for example, Hawaii and stuff, they didn't choose to be part of the U.S. So, like, I feel like that's another one, like, or, like, Puerto Rico, like, you could think, like, they didn't, like, I don't know, like, it's still, even though they won't call it a colony,
but it is.
Yeah,
it totally
it is. Like, they just have a little bit more, but, like, it's kind of like the Malcolm X quote, it's like, you wouldn't go up to somebody and be like, oh, we have progress if, like, the knife
yeah.
is, like, 6 inches long and they pulled out four, like,
yeah.
2 inches. It's still 4 inches
yeah.
deep in your back. It's, like,
that's
kind
right.
of the same thing. Like, you can't ask them to be, like, happy. Like, well, you get these privileges. But it's, like, that's not really, like, there's still a knife in your back.
Yeah. That, no, excellent point. Anybody else? Before we take a break? So we're going to take a little break. Really quickly, and this is Brother Ali, Uncle Sam, Goddamn, and I think that this is a very appropriate, song, you know, for this show. So we'll see you on the other side.
The name of this song is Uncle Sam, Damn. It's a show tune, but the show ain't been written for it yet. We gonna see if Tony Jerome and the band can maybe work it out for me, straighten me out right quick. I like it so far, man. Yeah. Come on, let's go. Welcome to the United States, land of the thief, home of the slave, Grand Imperial Guard, where the dollar is sacred and proud. Let's do the real. Come on now. Smoke and mirrors, stripes and stars, stoning for the cross in the name of God. Bloodshed, genocide, rape and fraud, written to the pages of the law, good law. The cold continent latchkey child ran away one day and started acting foul. King of where the wild things are, daddy's proud, cause the Roman Empire done passed it down. Imported and tortured the workforce and never healed the wounds or shook the curse off. Now the grown-up Goliath nation holding open all distance for the part of David. Can you feel? Nothing can save you. You question the reign. You get rushed in and chained up. Fist raised, but I must be insane, cause I can't figure single damn way to change. Welcome to the United States, land of the thief, home of the slave, the Grand Imperial Guard, where the dollar is sacred and power is God. Welcome to the United States, land of the thief, home of the slave, the Grand Imperial Guard, where the dollar is sacred and power is God. All must bow to the fat and lazy. The obey me, and why do they hate me? Who me? Only two generations away from the world's most despicable slavery trade. Pioneered so many ways to degrade a human being that it can't be changed to this day. Legacy so ingrained in the way that we think we no longer need change to be slaves. Lord, it's a shameful display. The overseers even got raped along the way, cause the children can't escape from the pain, and they born with the poison, this hatred in their veins. Try and separate a man from his soul, you only strengthen him and lose your own. But shoot that he walked near the throne. Remind him that this is my home. Now I'm gone. Welcome to the United States, land of the thief, home of the slave, the Grand Imperial Guard, where the dollar is sacred and power is God. Welcome to the United States, land of the thief, home of the slave, the Grand Imperial Guard, where the dollar is sacred. Hold up, give me one right here. Hold up. You don't give money to the bums on the corner with a sign bleeding from their gums. Talking about you don't support a crackhead. What you think happens to the money from your taxes? The government's the addict with $1 billion a week, kill brown people habit. And even if you ain't on the front line, when Master yell crunch time, you right back at it. Man, look at how you hustling backwards. At the end of the year, add up what they subtracted. 3 out of 12 months, your salary pay for that madness. Man, that's savage. What's left? Get a big-ass plasma to see where they made Dan rather point the damn camera. Only approved questions get answered. Now stand your ass up for that national anthem. Welcome to the United States, land of the free, home of the slave, the Grand Imperial Guard, where the dollar is sacred and power is God. Welcome to the United States, land of the thief, home of the slave, the
honor is sacred and power is God.
And that was Brother Ali. That was Brother Ali, Uncle Sam, GD, and that is a I don't want to say timeless classic because it's a little bit older, but I mean that song comes out of the 2000s. But I mean he put it down. Him and Rhymesayers. That is a song that you won't hear on corporate radio stations. You won't hear on MTV or BET, which is owned by Viacom now, unfortunately, but you'll hear it on this show. And the reason why you won't hear it is not because it's not a good song. It's, of course, it's a great song, but it's the lyrical content. They don't want you to think about these type of narratives in any shape, form, or fashion. And so they would much rather you listen to music every single day, nonsensically, and whether it refers to women in very, very horrendous ways or promotes senseless violence. You got to look at the people who are green lighting and making much of this possible. But anyways, that's another show that we've done before and perhaps we will do in the future, deconstructing, corporate media. Calvin, Aaliyah also alluded to she alluded to the recolonization of the African continent, where we have AFRICOM, which is the African command that was created in 2007 under George Bush, and then President Barack Obama expanded it exponentially, where we have U.S. military bases all throughout the African continent. And if you go to their websites, people are like, "Oh, you're just a bummer. You're whatever." It's funny. If you just go to the United States Department of Defense website and you go to their webpage that describes AFRICOM, they themselves describe AFRICOM, as part of its mission is to secure strategic resources in the African continent. I mean, they put it right there in plain sight. So yeah, people that will defend things that the United States government itself won't defend, won't say, like, they'll say, yeah, we said it. It's on our website. So, what we were talking about before, you said you almost sometimes kind of daydreamed about what the African continent might look like, had it not been colonized. And this is not to say that it's perfect. Like when anyone says, oh, it's not, oh, it would be perfect. Well, I mean, there's not a place on this earth that is perfect, but we can imagine that people would not be suffering, dying on a daily basis because of lack of basic, healthcare remedies and access to healthcare that we almost take for granted, in different places that we live today. We can imagine a continent that had those things. We can imagine a continent that had, not just adequate but above adequate healthcare infrastructure. We know that the Cubans have played a tremendous role in helping to build up healthcare in different parts of the African continent. Volunteering and sending Cuban doctors throughout the African continent to help out. The United States government doesn't do that, but so we can imagine that. We can imagine infrastructure. Roads, and bridges, things that Nkrumah did in Ghana, in his 8 years when he was in power, building a dam and building bridges and roads and things of that nature. We might see something, akin to what we see in the United States in terms of,
well-paved highways and byways and roads and things of that nature. There's a it's quite almost like endless, like, you know, things. We probably don't see the infant mortality rate, infants dying at birth at such a high rate in the continent of Africa. I mean, so we don't have to think and say, oh, well, they might be capitalist. I mean, like, I'm talking about life and death and the absence of preventable death, you know, the rate that we see in the African continent and other parts of the underdeveloped global South. What were you going to say?
I was just agreeing with what you were saying, like, and with the whole imagining what Africa would have been like, would have looked like. Well, you can't really imagine because you wouldn't know the answer. But
right.
To say, both for those who claim or say that Africa would have been like some sort of utopia, not only utopia, but like at least, if anything, first or second world, or like perfect, or, you know, way better off. Like,
we can say it probably would be way, but we can say
better
that
off,
yeah.
But like way better off. That's like, I feel like you can't go as far as.
But would you
that.
Say that about Europe? If I gave you an example of Europe, you would probably. You'd probably say that, oh, these white folks, they're so benevolent. I mean, we've never assumed the worst in them. But so why can't we imagine that you know, that there would be African countries that, if it was not for shadow slavery or colonialism, that would be akin to what we see with Norway, you know, Norway today or Denmark, which has issues, but we see that the poverty rate is much, much lower. We see that they have socialized healthcare. They have tertiary education. So why is it that brings us in our mind that think that because these are African people that we can't imagine that it would be it'd be like what we see in some European states? We have to imagine that, oh, there would be violence and chopping off people's heads, or, you know, is that what you're saying? That
no,
just
no.
Because they're African,
but
they're innately violent?
The reason why I say that is because without colonialism.
Well, look. Let's look
it
at
brought colonialism.
Look
brought
at Africa before colonialism.
No. In terms of like, it brought. I'm not saying. What I'm saying is, it brought states. It brought these countries. It named these countries.
But
before then,
colonialism.
Africans did not have. There was no Nigeria. There was no Ghana. There was no Sierra Leone. Who's to say Africans would have came together in conclusion and say
they might not have, but
country. And if they don't do that, then.
Then what?
At that point, it's still going to be tribalism going on. My tribe versus your tribe, and I'm not. Hey,
you nod your head, but that's not. You nod your head, Olivia, but because they're different kingdoms, that doesn't necessarily invoke violence. I mean, my thing is, why does it keep going? There were tribes and clans throughout Europe, and they fought. That is the advent. So when people started to migrate into different parts of Europe, and you started to have these different clans, you had that in Europe. You had people just going and killing people, whatever. I mean, look at the Dark Ages in Europe. I mean, look at what existed there. So let's not think that the Africa created the blueprint. But we look at before colonialism, where we had these kingdoms, you also had. You had kingdoms also working together. I mean, it's the revisionist history where we don't understand our history, and we have folks that teach us just this limited amount, and they teach you over and over again, and they're saying, oh, before colonialism, you had these tribes, and you were fighting all the time. Well, that's not true that they were fighting. That's not true.
Yeah,
that's true. You know, Europeans would come to Africa, different parts of Africa, to just freaking study, just to study from them, because it was one of the centers of knowledge and thought. And they would come and study, and they were taught by Black Africans, and they would come and study, and they would learn things like religion and philosophy and the smelting of iron ore from Africans. So we saw that was before colonialism. That was before colonialism. And you know, but in the same token, I mean, we look at Europe, and we want to think of it as like this benevolent thing. Look at some of the most heinous things that happened in world history, before colonialism, after colonialism. These are things that happened in Europe
or they happened in other parts of the world by Europeans that were carrying this out. If you look at what Europeans did, to India, we're talking about millions and millions of people were killed by the British Crown. I mean, that's just in India alone. And so we're thinking about this stuff. Africa and Africans have never gone to different parts of the world the way that Europe has and caused that kind of. Do we even think about that? And it's just crazy because and if you think for a second, the images that you think of that where we think of, oh man, if it wasn't for these states, it wasn't for the Berlin Conference of 1884, 1885, oh, then they'd be fighting and this, that, and the other. With the same time, you mean the same way that Europeans were fighting, the same way European clans were fighting, or you mean the same way that Europeans went throughout the entire world and were massacring people, whether it was indigenous people here throughout, you know, Turtle Island, North America, or throughout South America, or going to Jamaica as they went to Jamaica, where your family is from, and hanging pregnant women up and cutting the baby out of the womb and doing things of that nature throughout. This all happened, you know. But we never think of Europe or Europeans as in the same way that we think of in such a negative sense of Africans or indigenous people that are brown throughout the globe.
I feel people do see Europe for what it is. I'm just asking questions. I'm not.
Really no. Then the questions are important. Yeah, I'm just giving my take on answers, from a historical perspective.
Even though Europeans did those things, who's to say Africans didn't?
Yeah, but wasn't that supposed to? I mean,
I've thought about that before. I'm like, what if it was reversed? Like, it was Africans that went around and.
But it wasn't. That would be equally bad. But it didn't happen though. Africans didn't go like
on the continent, not like go out. But who's to say they don't want to hang your pregnant ladies?
But here's the thing. But what y'all are doing, and this is the crazy thing, is it shows you like how our minds have been taken over. We're working so hard to imagine like the worst Africans. Like, oh man, who's to say they were? Well, We can't speak in hypotheticals because we will never know. We will never know. So why think the worst? I'm simply speaking on what has happened. We don't know that Africans would have done that. I mean, shoot. I mean, if you want to try to make even a more valid argument, if I want to make a more valid argument, I can bring up Abu Bakari II, who traveled the same way Europeans did. He got, you know, from Mali and got on a ship and went to the Western Hemisphere. Did he go take over that land? No. He went there, and one of the ships was replete, besides men, was replete with gifts because they expected to see other human beings. And instead of saying, we're going there with guns and whatever to take this over, we're going there because if there are human beings there, we can trade with them. We can barter with them. So that's my own thing. Like Africans and Black people, you know, and indigenous people just have gotten just such a bad rap. I mean, we look at immigrants now from south of the border. People are like, oh, they're so bad. These Mexicans, they're just kind of
I don't want to sound difficult. Like, I hear that.
You know.
I hear that, but again, I'm just asking. I hear that, but who's to say he went out, bought those people's gifts,
mm-hmm.
and they made, I'm sure he did him. I'm just asking. What if, who's to say he didn't come back home and mistreated his people? Like, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, even though they might seem nice, they might go out and seem nice to the outside world, but as Africans, like, because the way Africa is right now is, like, with corruption and things, and so that's why I'm blaming. Was it, did colonialism give birth to those things, which it didn't? So if it didn't, who's to say, like, things like that haven't been happening before? Because a lot of people like saying, not a lot of people, but, like, religion of for example, one reason why people say Africa is not really like moving forward because they tend to like just stick to it like, oh, there's no, you know, there's an afterlife. I'm
we can say that about African Americans, can't you?
Yeah,
you can say that about people in Jamaica, and who gave them that religion? Who forced that religion upon them? Who told them that if you toil now, you know, as a slave, you worship the white man now. Since God is white, this is what they say, God was white and Jesus was white, that when you die, those are both lies, but that when you die, you'll live in eternity in bliss. Huh?
But religion was in Africa before colonialism, so...
Religion, spirituality was in that. Spirituality, which is much different than organized religion as we see it, whether it's Christianity or Islam or what have you. You know, that's why those European missionaries were so... They were so vital to what they were doing because they're like, we're going to go and we're going to proselytize every possible person in these new lands. Because think about it. If these people are really men of God, why the hell were they selected by the countries that they came from to go into parts of North America, into parts of South America, Central America, into parts of Africa, and to go and proselytize, knowing that massacres were, they didn't go out and speak out against these massacres. Matter of fact, when you think of San Francisco and San Diego, named after the San Diegan monks, the San Franciscan monks, all right? How did those cities get those names? Well, those folks, they hired those monks, those benevolent men of God, men of Christianity. Oh my gosh, they went and they told these like cowboys, these militias, to go and to exterminate the indigenous population, so they would have room to build their monasteries and to build different, you know, things, and, you know, and to expand, you know, their church here and their church there. I mean, for goodness sakes, the Catholic Church was at one time the biggest purveyor of slavery in the entire world. We know this. We know this to be true. Some folks can sit there and imagine, oh, what if Africans, whatever, but we don't have to imagine with these other scenarios. We don't have to imagine. We know. Because history tells us, and the words of people that carried these atrocities out, they were very proud about it. They didn't try to hide it. I mean, they were living in a time when it was acceptable, and it was known. They were like, listen, you know, black people, Africans, or these Indians, you know, as they called anyone from, you know, from the Western Hemisphere, these Indians, they're savages, they're barbarians, and we believe this crap. We believe this crap, and not once do we sit there and think, well, you know what? If they were sent here to civilize us, the root word of civilized or civilization is civil. There's nothing civil about burning people in wigwams and cutting the heads off of men, women, children, elderly, babies. There's nothing civil about that at all. There's nothing civil about that. And we don't ever speak about them in that way, about some of the most barbaric and brutal things.
Can I ask you this? It makes me question, even saying all that, and then knowing that the Europeans then were religious, or say Christians, and doing all of that, mm-hmm. all that evil stuff. How did they, like, would you say they took religion serious, or was it just a form of he said, she said, and we're just following what we were told, but, like, how can one man be religious and be a man of God and do such crime or such, you know, evil things?
Well, as you know, religion is like man-made kind of. It was man-made.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, yeah, it was man-made. Was this something
man-made
they took serious, or was this something like they were just, oh, I was brought up this way, but they still, like, I'm just, it makes you question.
Well, I mean, we look at slavery. We look at the time of chattel slavery in this country. I mean, there were men of cloth that they would go and they would get in front of their congregations and they would pull out the text. I mean, and they felt that they were really benevolent people, but they almost saw Africans as, you know, and I say Africans, any black person, they saw them as the kind of way that some of us see livestock and animals. They were to be worked. They weren't seen as like full human beings. I mean, we know this. I mean, shoot, it was in the U.S. Constitution for a very, very long time that you know, black people were not even full human beings. They're 3/5 of a human being. I mean, this was, you know, this is, you know, and so this was the understanding between, you know, with men and women who were religious and even those who weren't so religious. I mean, they their common bond was their skin color, their whiteness, and that.
Race.
Huh? Descriptors, just descriptors. And if we look at this descriptors, that's we actually take a literal sense. We look at descriptors. I mean, you know, it's funny because they kind of pick and choose. I mean, just looking at the descriptors, we would know that some of the people in the Bible that they swear are white were not white in any shape, form, or fashion. You know, so it's like kind of they kind of pick and choose. But, you know, but the Bible itself has been rewritten many times to suit the needs. I mean, you know, to suit the for instance, King James. I mean, his mother was, you know, Queen Elizabeth. And when it was his turn, I mean, you know, he hired scholars to rewrite the Bible to the way he wanted to be rewritten. I mean, this is like fact. I mean, that's why, and people, the secrets are hidden right, you know, they're hidden right in front of our eyes. I mean, why do you think it's called the King James Version? If it's such a holy grail, how can you have this version and that version and this version and this version and this version? Because we're taught not to critically think. We're taught not to critically think. The art of critically thinking is just that. It's an art. It should be something that's rudimentary, that is encouraged from as a youth all the way throughout life. But in this country, like the United States, I mean, you go to school and critical thinking is not something that's really encouraged. It's not. I mean, you ask these questions in class, a lot of teachers will shut it down quickly. I mean, we know this. I mean, I know this for a fact. I mean, I've mentored kids who's the teachers when they talked about, you know, Columbus not being a good person, and I had to go to these schools and advocate on behalf of some kids that I mentored. Yeah, you know, and they tell them that, you know, shoot, that's not true. Columbus wasn't a bad guy. I mean, even though this is like history, and I had to go and advocate on behalf of this young boy. And then, you know, when I did, the teacher, I was just kidding around. That wasn't true. I was just kidding around. I know Columbus was a bad guy. And I said, well, that's why would you kid around with a young boy, a 9-year-old boy in your class who's speaking up? Why would you shush him in the first place? So they know the history. They know the history.
And during break, when you were talking about your opposition thoughts against capitalism,
mm-hmm.
I think I figure what you mean. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, say for example, right, Europeans were always aware of Africans or black people.
Put a profit on it. Then
they're
commodity.
Those people down there. Yeah. I don't mind. I don't care so much about them.
Yeah.
But when opportunity came, when they saw new land.
Yeah.
And they knew profits, money became involved.
Yeah.
That's when.
Yeah. Like, when. Yeah.
When capital.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah. 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 That's part of it. Yeah. Without a doubt. Yeah. Definitely. That's a part of it. Yeah. Any closing comments before we adjourn? You know, I really appreciate, you know, even though Olivia snuck in a couple words there, I wish she would have spoke more, but she'll speak more, you know, all of you, from Olivia to Kelvin to Aaliyah to Calvin, all four of you have brought some really brilliant, brilliant, brilliant points.
To close it out, colonialism is just about what is and what not, and whenever we get a proper answer, we won't really know what happened, because we just, like Kelvin said, we weren't given that right, or we weren't given the opportunity to you know how Africa would have, you know, else would have been invested within ourselves. But the best thing to do is just to fix it up, you know, now, or to try to change. Because why did we just take them right from us?
That's a good solution. Unify, Pan-African, unify. Unify, you know, without a doubt.
That's one of the main solutions.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're not going to end this conversation. We're going to continue this at a later time. Olivia, do you have any closing?
Yeah, I agree. I think definitely the people that are in Africa right now should definitely try to hold the government more accountable. I'm not too knowledgeable about everything.
And also shut down and say, listen, we're holding you accountable. Mm-hmm. No longer are you gonna allow these Europeans and these Americans to come in and take our resources. That's the other thing, is to not just hold them accountable, but to hold these Western entities accountable for what they're doing right now as well. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, but I believe it's possible. You change all the time. I think it is possible to hold them accountable and change Africa.
Right on. Until next time, this you've been listening to Your World News, a place where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Peace.
Flooded in white powder, like those motherfuckers running away from the Twin Towers. Gunshots rock the earth like a meteor shower. Bowling for Columbine, fair giving the media power. Innocence devoured like a chicken spot snack box. Government cocaine cooked in the ghetto crack rock. Corrupt cops, false testimony at your arraignment. Check to check, constant struggle to make the payments. Working your whole life wondering where the day went. The subway stays packed like a multicultural slave ship. It's rush hour, 2:30 to 8 nonstop. And people coming home after corporate sharecropping and fuck flossing. Mothers are trying to feed children, but gentrification is kicking them out of their building. A generation of babies born without health care, families homeless, thrown the fuck off the welfare. Killing fields uptown. We live in distress and hang the flag upside down. The sound of conservative politicians on television. People in the hood are blind, so they tell us to listen. They vote for us to go to war instantly, but none of their kids serving the infantry. The odds are stacked against us like a casino. Think about it, most of the army is black and Latino. And if you can't acknowledge the reality of my words, you just another stupid motherfucker out on the curb, trying to escape from the ghetto with your ignorant ways. But you can't read history at an illiterate stage, and you can't raise a family on minimum wage. Why the fuck you think most of us are locked in a cage? I give niggas the truth, cause they pride is indigent. You better off rich and guilty than poor and innocent. But I'm sick of feeling impotent, watching the world burn. In the era of apocalypse, waiting my turn. I'm a Harlem nigga that's concerned with the future. And if you're in my way, it'd be an honor to shoot ya. Uproot ya with the evil that grows in my people, making them deceitful, cannibalistic and lethal. But I see through the mentality implanted in us, and I educate my fam about who we should trust.